All right, and we are live June 2nd, 2022, coming at you here from the very hot today, Belgrade, Serbia. Some of you might think of it as the former Yugoslavia. You wouldn't be thinking wrong. I like to use the expression that I coined it, the former Ukraine. Now you're seeing it go around. You're going to see it go around and around more and more. Remember, you heard it here first, the former Ukraine, in describing this and that part of Ukraine, or maybe, you know, soon the whole thing, but just remember where you heard it. Anyway, you know, normally, no matter what kind of talk we're doing, we normally start off just briefly looking over some of the events in the Donbass. Yeah. Pretty crazy stuff. We get a lot of these videos keep coming in from different groups of Ukrainian soldiers not happy with the situation there, and just using human beings to hold positions in trenches that are scheduled, like they're literally scheduled to be hit. There's a schedule of hitting them, and then there's like a percentage attached to like your chance of dying when the thing hits you. Whatever you've got, like 40% chance, 30% chance of dying when the thing hits roughly the target. Sometimes those things get right into the hole, right into the trench. It's like boom. But, you know, most of the time they're like, you know, right beyond it. And then, you know, you get people. It's war. It's ugly. It's also a racket. It's a multi-trillion dollar industry. And we have a lot of weapons coming through Ukraine now, more and more so. They're winding up in the hands of, you know, all kinds of semi-intended, you know, whatever you want to call it. Groups, terrorist groups, it doesn't mean that things are going swimmingly for anybody. It just like, you know, leave this, make everything as expensive for everyone all the time as much as possible on the way out. You know, that's all. Don't overthink it. I mean, rather, you know, go through the overthinking of it and then realize, you know, when you've come to your conclusions, you know, what you're looking at. When you're looking at your data, and you just have to sometimes get honest with the kind of conclusions that you're going to reach. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that if you were in Ukraine right now, you wish that you had thousands of dollars to get out of this thing. People are being drafted, and they're coming up with plans like how they're going to escape. It's like going to prison with like a death sentence or death lottery sentence attached. Things are basically breaking down as they said that they would. We said that Severodonetsk, there's this other town, city, whatever, on the other side of the river that's just a few kilometers away, and then that, you know, they can't really consider it done until that's done too, so that's a whole other operation. So you're, you know, then you have this plant, one of these facilities again, they're talking about Azot. How would these, you know, even the name is similar, like I'm triggered, you know, it's like Azot. Is that what is this, the Azot steelwork? Is this Azot stall? What's going on here? More catacombs? No, I don't think this one, I don't know anything yet, but it would, is it as big? Yeah, we are. No, I mean, no, but seriously, are we going to be in a situation so much propaganda and marketing out there for Azot battalion? I remember somewhere that a group, I forget the name of what the group was called. It'll come to me. They were called like the Free Corps or something like that, and they rebranded or joined Azov, so it's like in memory or in respect for the losses, you know, the evacuation, the heroic extraction from Azovstal. We're looking at now a recreation of this scenario in Severodonetsk. But what it's going to require is people to get in there with like the maps and really look at the facility and then, you know, read about it and find the size of it. And then just see, is this, you know, are we really looking at as wild of a ride in front of us? My hunch is not, you know, but what do I know? Right? I haven't actually had a minute to dig in. It would literally only take a minute. Some of you are probably looking right now. Like, what is this? Yeah, just get on the Google map and zoom in on Severodonetsk. Try to find the, you know, type in the address of the Azot, whatever. And take a look at it. So, yeah, I look at a lot of Ukrainian sources too, like, you know, very Ukrainian sources. And they're saying, yeah, we lost Severodonetsk. I think they're saying... they're saying, well, with Lyman, they lost. With Severodonetsk, the Ukrainian forces have withdrawn to the western bank. That's basically along the western bank would be along the river, probably just the other city. The other town, that's just, you don't really have it without it, right? So they're admitting it. And they say, actually, the political editor of Bild newspaper, very, very well-known asshole, Julian Rupke, says that the Ukrainian general staff confirms his information that Ukrainian forces withdrew to the western bank of Seversky Donets, what they call it. As a result, five more villages came under the control of the Russian army. They always say temporary, but they came under I skipped that. I should have left it in there so you can see how they write. Came under the temporary control of the Russian army. This is a lot like Zelensky. There's a lot like Zelensky talking about the temporarily occupied Zaporozhye or Kherson, temporarily occupied. We have no plans. You know, we're not in a position right now to deoccupy it. Think about the meeting they had just to arrive at that word. Deoccupy. They were like, we can't liberate it. Well, we can't. What's the word? Liberate? No. Because then we're unable to do the right thing. We need to make it sound more mechanical, like we are unable to carry out a procedure. Not that we're unable to win, because unable to liberate sounds like we're actually, it sounds like a microcosm of a general, you know, like we're talking about defeat in general. We're unable to liberate Kherson at the time without taking losses in the tens of thousands. This is not losses that we're willing to take. This is what Zelensky said. So they're not planning any mobilization. That's what that was. That's news. Sort of news, you know, rumors. I mean, I'm peddling it as not exactly news. But he did say that. I'm not making that up. He did say that they're not, he did say, and they said, we have no plans at the time to deoccupy, yeah, certain parts of the country. I mean, we have the plans, but we're not in the process of doing it like immediately. And we're in the process even, but without long range missiles, it's completely out of the question. So now they're getting these MLRS, blah, blah, blah. But looks like they're not going to come equipped with the right stuff. Why not? Because they can fall into Russian hands, and then the Russians know how they work. Why would they fall into Russian hands? Because a Ukrainian would fucking sell it to them. These are people on the line, and they have this equipment, and there are people there, and they're like, we don't, of course there's responsible people closer to the equipment, so-called responsible, but no one is that much in love with people marching them off to their death. Well, if they can figure out a way to sell it, they will. Or to be paid a lot of money to give away the location. Can you imagine that? Just you have a bank account in Cyprus. You're like a Ukrainian, your SBU. You have contacts with the Russians, and you have like a anonymous account somewhere. And boom, 50,000 euros. What's the location of this MLRS? Boom, cha-ching, 50,000 euros. It's over here. Why not? That's how this conflict's been going down in a lot of ways. So let's look here. This is a open public questions session, so I'm going to get in here. I'm being told that the volume is too quiet. Let me know here in the comment section now if the volume is like too low or what. Yet the other day I was being told it was too loud. I actually didn't adjust anything. I'm just farther from the mic. I think I was too close before. So check your volume on your phone. All right. Let's dig in. So we have Sussman verdict, you know, in the States. We have the stuff going on with the Durham, etc. Now, I think my general view, this is from a longtime friend of ours, question from Kay. This is, things have to be set up first. There's a global game at play. You know, everyone has different theories about the different moving pieces. Anyone who says they know for sure is probably selling something. But trying to do good homework on it, you know, you arrive at a lot of different angles, and sometimes you have to go back, and sometimes you have to go back and revise your ideas all together. I'm still of the opinion that the international situation vis-a-vis Russia, Great Reset, all of these things are connected. I mean, just because you're collecting information, you're getting confessions, you're, you know, all of these things, these are cards that you would play in so many different ways. There are so many different ways to play these cards. You know, you don't want to be, no one operating at this level has the luxury of not taking into consideration a lot of these more, you know, you might call them pragmatic or even Machiavellian considerations. And, you know, I tend to think that politically, by and large, most of these elites or you know, managerial class politicians at the highest level, former presidents and candidates, the Clintons and these people, they generally tend to get away with this kind of stuff, you know, generally. I would like to see things go differently. I think they'd be very well could. There are very big decisions and compromises and deals that the establishment would need to make. They would probably need to see it as being redeeming in terms of their credibility. If they thought that it would restore faith in institutions to prosecute all, you know, all the way at the level of Hillary Clinton, ultimately, we're talking about bigger fish, right? That's the only real big fish in that game, you know, what a lot of people voted for is she'd be in jail. And I feel like we're now in the year 2022. And yet there's no way that this conflict in Ukraine, which needed to happen, like for so many reasons, not just for immediately Russian-Ukrainian reasons, but when you look at the Great Reset and you look at so many things, there's no way that this could have happened with a second Trump presidency. And there would be a lot of, you know, I think that out of a number of possibilities, you know, Trump decided what the most strategic thing to do, you know, was that conferred the best position of power, and then going with that plan, how to actually build that plan, right, while creating this illusion among his base, among his supporters, and among his information war department, you know, probably Michael Flynn and the Digital Soldiers Project that became the Q thing. I would say that they made it look like they were serious about this crazy event happening, and they got a lot of us fooled. And that's good, because if their own supporters are fooled, then, you know, there's a better chance that they've got the enemy fooled. And then they just, there's no way to avoid certain outcomes. So you build up all those outcomes as traps, and you build up all those outcomes, you build that into your own plan. So you look at what's happening. I think that, you know, there's a problem in the attention span and testing. There's a lot of testing of the information warfare internal systems inside the U.S., how they metabolize information. Like, you know, what are the different groups doing that are different types of digital soldiers? Sometimes they're more blue anon. Sometimes they're not. They're totally out of the control of anything, you know, related to any Michael Flynn project, right? There's so many different Hasbro trolls and you know, troll armies and stuff. It's a project that goes back, oh gosh, you know, let's see, 20 years, I would say 15 plus years in a serious way, in the modern way, in the way that it takes shape today, for about 15 years. And, you know, if you were all the stuff with Durham, clearly it's real scary. There was questions if the man even existed. I mean, this is real stuff. And yet these events in Russia actually have to play out a certain way. What I want to say, the point I want to make was, it's an interesting test of the information war sphere to see like what aspects of the Russian propaganda, like connecting the biological weapons labs to the specific members of the Democrat Party, like all this stuff we kind of get away from because it was big. It was coming out like big in February and March and through like maybe like the first week of April. And then sort of like the attention turned to the, you know, Azov thing and the standoff with Azov Stal, and are we going to get a perp walk? We got a couple perp walks. We got a couple of faces in there that were nice to see. But we kind of forgot what the broader, you know, the things with the Great Reset, we forgot, you know, these are all like things that kind of frame the show. It depends on how you want to divide up the show, but I mean, maybe this was like season two stuff. Well, you know, we're over here now, like in season seven, and we can forget. And I wouldn't forget, but it's interesting to see. I mean, if you want to talk about the Bidens' biological and their involvement in biological weapons with Soros and biological weapons, that's crazy. But all that stuff came out. Biological weapons. These people are everything they said about Saddam Hussein. Everything they said about Saddam Hussein is actually them. Anthrax, avian weaponized avian flu, all those everything. Everything they said about Saddam is actually them. And that's how these, you know, these people are. We know how it goes. It's pathological. At any rate, so, yeah, that's my sense of Sussman, you know, Clinton, Durham, the whole thing. Turn the page. What is this fight really about from the West's perspective, in your opinion? Is it world enslavement, resource control over Europe, money, etc.? Yeah, yeah, look, this is a good question. We obviously, we touch a lot of, most, a lot of our focus actually on this channel has been a lot about the election, election integrity, you know, what the plans were, what's happening inside the West. So there's effectively, there's been a significant reduction in American power, both for, you know, relative to itself and relative to its former self and relative to power in the world. So it's from both directions. It's not just relative to its former self, but, you know, if all power in the world had gone down or something, then that would be, you know, they might be in the same relative location, even being less than their former self, right? But this is not the case. The U.S. has lost power, ability to project power significantly in the past several decades. And we've seen that all over. So right now, I don't see the things that they're doing as being as proactive as they would like them to be. They're mostly reacting. And to the extent that they have people convinced that they're in charge, the reason that there's this strong social voice right now that's saying, like, this is the direction of society and this is the way that things are going to happen, is not very slick, is it? It's not very smooth, right? Because you would just fucking do it, right? So why are they talking so much about it? Do you see? So, yeah. And then... but there, it's a very deep question that you're asking, and it's not so much about money. They're moving beyond money. It is about enslavement and resources, but they just have a totally different view of where, like, world population should be, how we're going to deal with automation. See, there's a lot of things going on, like changes in technology, and some of them they don't like, but they talk about it like they like them. Just like they talk about China, like, just like they talk about, like, oh, yes, investment in China and bank, da 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 da, and they got all these people thinking that they're in tight with China, like, when they're not, right? In fact, like, China has them very firewalled in many, many ways, and but these people talk their book, and they're trying to always project that they're setting an agenda that they haven't really been, like, in a good position to set for, like, a couple of decades. Like, I would say, like, maybe even, like, since the 80s or since the middle 90s, you see. Yeah, there was a weird postulate that came out a number, you know, like, 30 years ago from some small Trotskyite group. And it was, like, Socialist Workers Party or something. It had this idea that actually it was possible that maybe that the U.S. had in fact lost the Cold War, and at the time it just seemed like the most retarded type of hypothesis, or actually that was their line, theory, or their, you know, praxis, or whatever the hell they call it, Marxist-Leninist. But as time has sort of marched forward, you've seen, you know, how they've done the bubbles and the culture war and a lot of these things, a lot of the planned, sort of planned demolition stuff. Like, but that doesn't mean that, it doesn't mean that these were people that were, like, came into a healthy society and then, you know, started to undermine it recently. Like, this is, you know, the same people kind of involved in managing the collapse in a way that makes it look like they're setting the agenda and making, you know, turning the page and, you know, talking about tomorrow. Well, they don't really have the power to make tomorrow, you see. But they talk about it a lot. What do I make of the Saker's vax taking and forbidden open discussion about this pandemic. I've explained to people, I don't talk about other people's ideas very much at all, because I don't spend time with them. Frankly, I'm filled with my own head of ideas, and I read and observe what's going on. And I people that I know personally that I talk to, I just ask them, hey, what do you think about this? People ask me, people message me, people write, a lot of writers, other people you might know, we talk often. So Saker's not among people I talk to. I never thought that he was like doing anything other than a, you know, cookie cutter production. And I've never thought that his insights were particularly, you know, prescient or profound, or, you know what I mean? Like worth, you know. I wish I could say he was also a nice man, but he's not a nice man either. So I don't know, you know, I frankly don't give a fuck, you know what I mean? But it's, the fact that he took the vaccine, I hope he takes many vaxes. You feel me? I hope he takes all the boosters. Why has Greece compromised itself with Russia and Iran? Because the deep state of Greece is still very Gladio, NATO controlled. So despite the different waves from the right and from the left of, you know, Euroscepticism, and despite this general sort of push, Greece, both from the left and from the right, has kind of had this weird position that, despite being a country very much like Italy or Spain, where the divisions of 80 and 90 years ago are still the defining divisions in the country today between the radical extremes. They're still fighting World War II in many ways. But where they were finding a lot of common ground was on the Euroscepticism and things like this. And it's probably the majority of Greeks is the point, whether they're like far-right nationalists or communists, labor, trade, or whatever, all sectors of society, pretty Eurosceptic and pretty aware how the Troika foisted a fake debt onto Greece, you know, and all of the austerity and the nonsense that's happened. And then remember the big election, remember Tsipras and the whole thing, and it was supposed to be like, they even had proposals and were like leaking them out to the world to get everyone excited. It was awful, disgusting. I hate Tsipras. For this game, he was born with a silver, very wealthy family, never fucking worked a day in his life. Magically prime minister of a country at the age of 37. Well, of course, you know, his father is Tsipras also. Reminds us a lot of Trudeau. And he completely, people hate him. He failed. People elected that whole coalition to get out of the EU. But the deep state, all of the, from the dictatorship, in Greece, are all these NATO command structures. So the intelligence, that's the problem. Greece needs like a thorough root canal. The upcoming G7, I don't think it's a relevant thing. I think there's a lot of chat about it, but I think, you know, my general sense, Gordon, is, and thank you for the question. Communications have changed so much, and the ability for, I hate to say, it's kind of funny, but like on Twitter, you'll have foreign ministers just kind of exchange quips real fast with each other. And it was prior to like Twitter and stuff, there wasn't a social media platform that these people would interact on specifically. Does that make sense? So it's kind of weird how that's evolved. And why do I say that? Because a lot of the G7 stuff is, the important stuff is like the sidebar stuff. A lot of the important stuff are the informal conversations that larger groups of people that come as part of these entourages or attaches, you know, get to have with each other, and these other side things. And other than that, G7 is sort of like, you know, the collective West, If they want to be G8, that's always this game, G8, you know, because you remember you had Russia in the G8, G7, G8, and then you have G20. But with the so-called West kind of thing, you have, obviously, within Europe, you had the Council of Europe, and Russia was a member of that as well. And they're out of that now. Now they're talking about World Trade Organization and World Health Organization being out of that. That would be all very good. All right. So, yeah, if the audio quality is not great, it's just the internet. Just understand this is telegramic. I'm using a very good mic, and we've got the settings how they should be. So, you know, quality isn't going to be like a pre-recorded. This is a live broadcast on a small app, right? So, here we go. Poland's position, I'm being asked, people kind of curious. Well, we've talked about this a lot on past episodes, but I'll just give the brief. Poland is in a weird place. They would like to have some, they're aware of, you know, their relationship to NATO. There's a lot of complacency in their establishment, but there's this kind of idea at the same time that it would really be something if they could like put their country, their army into another country, you know, as part of some operation that was against Russia. That would just be huge, huge for part of the electorate behind the present government. Does that make sense? So, you know, Poland has potential economically if it's with Lithuania, and there's been this idea. You kind of see it with the Visegrad group, but it's sometimes called Middle Europa or the Baltic to Black Sea corridor alliance countries, or however, this idea of like Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, Poland being all sort of like in an alliance with actually the dream of Belarus and Ukraine all in it together. And this would be like a Polish, they think that with all of this combined, could become like another force, equal to Europe in some sense, Western Europe, like the EU in some way, but militarily more stronger and able to contain or confront Russia. Poland is interested in that project. They're a longtime participant in this stuff, and a lot of the Poland-Ukraine relations are a lot of this stuff was kind of developed in its direction that you see it today by people like Condoleezza Rice, by people like Donald Rumsfeld, have shaped Poland's position, but they're going very hard with like the 1930s nostalgia imagery. We live in interesting times. I mean, I'm not just saying that like I'm some liberal who imagines, you know, Hitler everywhere. I'm not saying that. I'm literally saying like from an aesthetic, you know, stage managing kind of point of view and presentation and stuff and optics, like they're really actually going for the 1930s, the uniforms and the soldiers and the way that they frame their events. So it's very fascinating. That means we live in interesting times. Yeah. Turning the page, the predicted global food shortage is real. Yeah, it's real. It's fake. You know, this is a question that's actually about reality. So it depends on how you view reality, you know. I mean, to the extent that you know, a conspiracy of media to say that there's a food shortage, right, will justify collusion in food distribution or retail firms in increasing prices even above the inflation rate. That's what shortages would lead to. And then just poor people are priced out of access to food, right? But that doesn't necessarily that doesn't necessarily mean there's even a real shortage. I mean, it's a complicated question because you can do artificial things to create a real shortage. I mean, you can do things like you can burn food, you can not allow food to grow, you can buy the food and keep it off to the side, you can keep it off the market. There's a lot of things. You can not have a trade deal with a country that produces a lot of food like Russia, or you could be in a stupid position where you're unable to import it, or you have to export all of what you produce and now your people can't. There's so many, you see what I'm saying? So many angles there. People should be acting like there's a global food shortage, not in terms of scrambling to race to buy food now. If you haven't already prepared, maybe you've just started listening now, but you should have previously purchased, 3 to 6 months of food that can last. And shortages, scarcity, there's always a price solution if you have money. So it's just in terms of the downward pressure on people, it's more likely to be a problem in the so-called, in the political global South, Middle East, Latin America, Sub-Saharan Africa, MENA region, not South Asia, where you can walk around and just eat food growing literally like on any tree. Okay. But in the deserts of the Middle East, you will have that problem. So that will create in Sub-Saharan Africa also, that will increase starvation if things go. I mean, there's so many different possibilities, I'm just saying. A lot of people could afford to, a lot of people in so-called first world countries could afford to maintain something close to their relative, present level of food consumption. If the price were to like almost double, it would just mean that they're spending less on other things. But with gas prices where they are, I mean, it's hard to really tell, right? Just conversationally, there's too many different variables in play. But to say predicted global food shortage is real is kind of like adding like, are you asking that it's real, that the prediction was real, or that the food shortages are happening for the reasons that some people predicted? People predicted for different reasons. So, that's how I would actually deconstruct the question. Turning the page, whatever happened to the field grade foreign officers that were evacuated from Azovstal? Well, we imagine that we remember at the time that in the agreements of the surrender, okay, in the surrender agreement was no cameras. But yet we saw cameras for a lot of people, but we saw it was stipulated in the language of the, evacuation to custody agreement. We saw that already, that there would be no cameras. So I suspect that there were people that were not caught on camera and whose identities are being protected because exposing their identities is valuable. I mean, there, you see what I'm saying? It's more things to hold back, more things to increase the value of what they might have to do with these people, right? So that's my sense of what's happened there. I just remember specifically that there were not supposed to be cameras, and yet there were. And I say yet there were, but that's not, you know, that's what, that was our impression at the time. Like, oh, I guess there was cameras. But if you actually think about it, we don't know that cameras were for everybody or who that applied to. So it makes sense to me. And you wouldn't want to be talking about everyone that you have. Like, they know who, the people who need to know. And the privacy of the of those people is part of the value, right? Part of the value. You lose a lot of value in having them if you're shaming the world about it, you see. Maybe it's even better to kill them at that point, you see. So why is Greece, turning the page, why is Greece of importance to the U.S.? Why is Greece so importance to the U.S.? Because the British Empire, to the extent you talk about sort of like City of London and these sort of the Anglo part of the transatlantic power network, Anglo-Saxons, the A5, they actually own the gold mines in Greece, and Greece produces enough gold to be the wealthiest country, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, probably the wealthiest country in Europe. You can see, you know, ancient Greece even had gold mines, and the kings of, you know, the various Greek Hellenic kings and later, you know, electeds and so forth, were a lot of this power of the Greeks was in their gold. And Greece has gold mines, and they have the biggest gold mines. And they're owned by the British through a Canadian firm, but that means British. That was one of the crazy insults of the entire so-called Greek euro insolvency crisis 10 years ago. Remember that? Remember how it was basically, everyone remembers with a brain what happened. It was in the U.S. with the toxic derivatives, the too big to fail, and then they remember the too big to fail thing? So before that shit hit the fan, they actually were selling these deregulated assets, but they were actually liabilities, to Europe, and then Europe was printing euros based upon the value of those things. Okay, then when that poop hit the propeller, the Troika created a make-believe story cut entirely out of whole cloth that Greece had done something, and that Greece was the reason for this thing that actually had to do with Goldman Sachs and, right? I mean, they were just the fall guy, but the big Bernie Madoff, just the fall guy, but the big stuff, they were all involved. And somehow they made people think that Greece was the reason for this. That's why you had later, eventually, Tsipras and all this stuff, and the Euro, you know, all of the Grexit stuff is based on this. Everyone knew it was a lie. It was just a pretext to go in to steal the national assets, to kick old people out of their retirements, etc., to cut the budget for the firefighters and police, first aid, hospitals, schools, roads, just cut the pensions, and just make believe that this had to do with something that Greece did like a no-no, bad. None of these billions of dollars were even circulated like through Greece. They weren't part of, you know, there wasn't like a Greek finance minister that made some discretionary error or agreement about some money and it didn't turn up. Or no. The entire thing was fictional. You just read it over and over and over, and like, where did this come from? When did it happen? Nothing. Greece has the gold mines. This is gold. Greece would be one of the most powerful states of Europe, of a sovereign Europe, of a sovereign Greece, of a Europe of 100 sovereign banners playing an orchestra together. Greece would be a very loud section of that orchestra with those gold mines that are owned by the British Empire. All this poverty in Greece is fictional. I mean, it's real. But it's unnecessary. And it's unjust. I don't want to even talk more about Greece. I'm going to cry. So I see you here before, but that's a dumb comment, and you talk a lot, so sorry. That's a dumb comment. Bitcoin is not going to replace gold. That's a dumb idea. That's a very dumb idea. Now I'm just going to tell you, since you're the guy who knows everything in the comment section, people point out things you're wrong all the time about, by the way. Gold is not going to be surpassed by the combination of imagination and electricity and computer hardware. It just doesn't work that way. What is going to be selling like hot potatoes are going to be like, you know, kits to test gold for physical possession. Of course, you can't take physical possession of Bitcoin. It's just not the same thing. It's not safe. It's just like a liability, just like owning gold. Okay. You like to argue and not be with your host anymore. Goodbye. So, I've never said to people not to get into Bitcoin, and I think you can make money in the, you know, for a while until not. And there's going to be very hopefully signs, and it'll probably be a bubble. It probably pops, so it'll probably be right at a time when people think it's going to go up, and then it'll just, just not be. I'm not anti-Bitcoin. I know that people actually own things and then they believe in it because they bought it. They put their money into it and they talk their book and they believe their book, and they'll argue with people, and it's just their fucking emotions, and I'm tired of it, and it's retarded, and people are dumb. They're not able to see their own. See, I got no skin in game. I got no Bitcoin. And people say, oh, that's why you're against it. It's like, well, actually, no. You know, I'm not against crack. I'm just not a crackhead. You know what I'm saying? Is I don't have to be on crack, you know, to speak legitimately about that. Crack is ultimately bad. And I'm not saying Bitcoin's ultimately bad. I just don't think it's, you know, the same thing as gold. It's not better. It's different. It's almost unrelated. It doesn't function the same way. All the functions of money is a medium of accounting, medium of exchange, medium of form of savings, wealth accumulation. There's many different, you know, a form of credit, form of debt, is a sign of promissory note. All the functions of the money, it works. It's different from fiat. It's different from gold. It's just different. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just different. Comparing it's kind of dumb, except that gold will survive a nuclear war, and Bitcoin wouldn't survive, you know, a few anchors being dragged across the bottom of the Atlantic, or a few satellites get shot down, or your battery dies, or you lose your password. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. You know, I guess you could lose your map where your gold is buried, right? But it works differently. You're going to be able to buy things with gold. You know, I'm not a currency expert either. Yeah. What I do have is common fucking sense, and I do think through things. And when I think about ultimate bad situations, talk about, the types of crises that people think about where, like, there's only going to be Bitcoin for what reasons, I'm not exactly sure. But if there was some kind of, like, totalitarian takeover of money, which, like, there already is, of course, the idea that Bitcoin isn't controlled is because you're ignorant about ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the dark web and how Bitcoin was used largely by ISIS to deal with weapons and drugs purchases. And yet, organizations that are not supposedly under the radar and being investigated and et cetera, do much, much, much less crime relative to fucking ISIS and decapitations and trying to conquer a country and killing hundreds of thousands of people. And maybe just moving, like, you know, a few hundred pounds of steroids or something from Eastern Europe into Miami Beach. You see what I'm saying? And all of a sudden, the FBI knows exactly every detail and knows how to stop Bitcoin transactions. Do people forget this, that they were able to, like, stop Bitcoin transactions? They were able to stop yes, they can do that already. Okay? So if you don't know that, and you were misinformed, or you thought that was a rumor or something, just go do your homework. But don't be a Bitcoin owner and then looking for copium. You'll never understand what I'm saying. And I'm not against, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think it's great to own Bitcoin. That's the funny thing about it. I think it's great. If you bought it at a time the money and it's going up, it's great. You see what I mean? But don't try to sell me on your fucking religion. You see what I'm saying? Because that's your religion. It's just a belief system, like a lot of other things. I just know that I believe in God. You see what I'm saying? I don't believe in Bitcoin. Does that make sense? But yeah, I'm not saying it's not real. You know, you can make money. You see? So what? You know what I mean? Like, you can make money in real estate. You can flip property. It doesn't mean there's not going to be a bubble that bursts, you know? So but the fact that intelligence agencies can stop transactions, and that they can trace every transaction, they can freeze transactions, and they can seize Bitcoin wallets, they can seize Bitcoin, you know, accounts, they can seize whatever they want to seize, okay? Do you understand? And you're not safe. There's no anonymity. You're not safe. Like, there's no anonymity with it in most cases, unless you went out of your way from the very beginning, and you probably didn't. And even then, it's not. Like, as people whose job it is, just try to think through your own story. Just try to think through your own thing that you're proposing. Like, order breaks down, there's two societies. Like, how does this work that, you know, you're still able to access your Bitcoin, but everyone else, you know, is living in a cage with a camera on them, and the bugs are being fed to them, and but you're allowed to walk around and buy things and do, because you have fucking Bitcoin. Is that how you imagine things are going to go down? Or how about human beings come to your house and say, give us your Bitcoin, and then you say no, and then they tie you to a chair, and you have how many? You have, I guess, 20 fingernails. So we'll start there. Okay? So there's rubber hose social engineering. There's rubber hose hacking. Okay, they'll just beat you with a rubber hose. Like, you are a human being. You're not, you know, you're not uploaded into Elon Musk's mainframe, okay? You have to somehow get your imaginary money into something that an actual person would sell the thing in exchange for, like, a real thing that you can eat in exchange for a thing. Trust me, it's on this USB. Like, fuck you. Like, go put it, the thing, in your computer. I promise it's not a virus, it's my Bitcoin. Like, how do you... I don't even want it. It's dumb. It's dumb. I get how it works. I just don't own any. I get how it works. I'm not new to the internet. Okay, every Web3 venture capital company in the world talks about some blockchain, some 1970s technology blockchain. And it's just one of these things that creates hype value through perception, because so many people don't know what it is, and you just put the thing, you just put the word blockchain into it, and it's new. I've seen academic peer-reviewed papers use the word blockchain in the title, talking about social organization using the word blockchain. And then in the abstract, they actually readily admit in the abstract, we've used the word blockchain because it draws eyes. I'm not talking about other cryptos. I was just talking about Bitcoin in particular. Every crypto can work a little bit differently. You know, I'm not against any of them. Some are clearly more like scams than others, but I'm not against or for any of them. I think you could make money on any of them. Don't get me wrong, okay? All right. That's enough about... I'm annoyed with the subject, as you are. I'm not a crypto expert. I'm not against buying things to make money. Buy, sell. And I think you can make a lot of money in crypto, just to be clear. I don't think it's replacing anything. That's not how human interactions work. If you work in the real world and like farm, do things and have crypto and all these, and you understand how, that's one thing. But if you just kind of live completely autistically online and you have an online identity and, you know, you look nothing like your avatar and all these things, and you think that you're going to have some electronic money and then you're going to avoid the stormtroopers or something, I just don't understand how you avoid the concentration camps, you know, that way. I just don't see it. Yeah. Very, very good. Very, very good. Turning the page. Will Latin America rise against Uncle Sam's imperialism? And will the Sam, and what will Sam do to stop it? Yeah, I wrote a long time ago on something on the subject. Pax Americana or Pan Americana. And I said, I was basically the U.S. only future for the U.S. Is to like integrate. Is to integrate into the rest of Latin American economy. The traditional vectors of power in Latin America that were closer to the U.S. Historically had been also in very strange, you know, ways. Closer both at times to the Vatican, closer at times to the City of London, also, and closer at times to culturally, kind of in the image of Spain. European, like in the image of the of Spanish colonialism, but. The world's changed a lot in 30 years, and Latin America has changed a lot in 30 years. And the things that signify and the meanings, aesthetics, and concepts of left and right, and sovereignty, and these questions, and Americanization, all of these things have changed. Just to give an example. Just to give an example, okay? The president of El Salvador... All right. People like just perceive that he's kind of like a populist right kind of guy. Yeah, populist right, because he kind of says the things that make like that the MSM calls the populist right for some reason. He's against like the jab, the lockdowns, he's, you know, the globalization and stuff. He was warmish on Trump. But he's also good with AMLO in Mexico, who's the left, right? But so this President El Salvador, though, despite this being from the conservative, like pro-business coalition, before that, he was with the communists. He was a communist leader. Did you know that? Well, do you know what the FMLN is? Well, El Salvador, sorry, that would be the yeah, it would be FMLM. And the FMLN are Marxist-Leninist organization. And the guy comes from, like, his parents were Muslim into, like, Islam and Marxism and all kinds of weird stuff. He's Lebanese or something. Anyway, but that's very normal in Latin America, just so you know. That's just to understand the world. So the kind of the old model, this, what am I saying, right? This old idea of the Latin American left, of course, that was played out very big, like in the image of Che Guevara, the Cuban Revolution, and we saw that played out very big, like in Venezuela by the Bolivarians. But I think we're going less ideological. We're going in a direction less ideological. It's not going to be like leftist as much in the sense of like Che Guevara and stuff. I think that there's as the as some of these, you know, protectionist and developmental policies in Latin America that the left has championed, okay, have led to a growth of a wealthier middle class because those policies of the left in Latin America have actually worked. This is the funny thing about how reality is, okay, giving rise to a larger consumer, more metropolitan. Tonized middle class in a lot of Latin American cities who think more like independent thinkers, right, than controlled block voters like you get with labor unions or civil, like mass society formations based on the working class. That might be even low information voters. And there's a lot of awareness now in this very large, fast-growing Latin American middle class. People are not left-wing or right-wing, and they might vote for the left-wing party this election, for, and it'll be a communist-type even party even, or socialist, Marxist, in one election, and then the next election they'll vote for the conservatives or whatever. If they think maybe the taxes went too high, or they think this needs to be like that, or if they don't like the some of the transhumanist stuff is making them a little bit weird on the left, and they might, or the armpit hair stuff is kind of weird or a bit college-ish or pedantic, and they kind of maybe get onto the conservative tip for a while, but it, you know. Turning the page. How come there are former communists that seem to have same views as Trump? Interesting that the extremes have isolated the majority of people as one. Yeah, I mean, the ruling class created this artificial political construct called the center. Many of the truths, therefore, were shattered and dispersed in an explosion, and some of those shards of truth exploded leftwards, and some of those truths exploded rightwards. A lot of communists supported Bernie Sanders, and Bernie Sanders' views were the same as Trump's on, you know, probably like 80% of the substantive economic issues that voters were concerned about. So there was a lot of overlap. There was a lot of Bernie voters that voted for Trump. So that's part of the same phenomenon. And then the cabal has done a lot of weird things, and things don't make a lot of sense to people without a very long explanation. And it's kind of hard to explain to folks how that works. Like, you know, how, for example, like communist states, how like XJP or Kim Jong-un in North Korea, even a more communist state than China, but both communist party leaders have good relations with Trump, right? Right? The cabal hates XJP, and they hate Kim Jong-un in North Korea, right? The cabal hates those guys. But inside the U.S., they were propping up BLM, Antifa. So then they were like, oh, they're the communists, you see. But on the international relations stuff, Trump was kind of like, in a funny way, at times, tacitly more in line with axes of resistance. Okay, that's just look at, for example, Brazil with Bolsonaro. We've talked about that before, too, right? I mean, his commitment to BRICS. Right, Trump had to pretend like he didn't like BRICS, but obviously we know that Trump is not a fan of the IMF and the World Economic Forum because he spoke out against them. And if BRICS is offering competition to that, well, you do the math. But I don't consider those extremes. Because they're only extreme from the point of view of what? Extreme from the point of view of a radical extremist ruling class that has said that previously quite, you know, moderate positions are now extremist. You see? Many things are not that extreme at all. They're just called extremist. Looking well, this was a good public session. If I take another question, that would be it, but I think we're good. I got through the ones that made sense to me. Great. So this was our June 2nd public question session. I think I got all the ones that weren't talked about too much already. But you know, you can ask again, and we have new listeners, and I'll get into old questions. The drive is accessible to folks who on Patreon or Subscribestar pitch in $5 or $10 a month, and it's a drive, and there's a lot of episodes we record almost every day since about May, like around my birthday. It hasn't been as tight, but we hit it every other day or so, and but we're gonna get back into it. There's big things that are gonna be happening even in the Ukraine. So those are all there, and we talk about all kinds of things. I mean, my you know, in a serious field and what we can talk about, what I would talk about with, you know, in my work or my education, would be like on international relations, geopolitics, security, color revolutions, counter coup, counterinsurgency type stuff, political economy. So not like not econometrics, not economics, but the interplay between political outcomes and economic trends, like political economy and the relationship between political philosophy and political economy, or, you know, the philosophy of economy or of economics. That's a good subject for me. But as a person like yourself, who's just interested in a lot of subjects, for the past 10 or 15 years, I've looked a lot at the stuff with, thank you for the birthday. There's just, now these are interesting comments, but yeah, it's anyway, so that stuff's on the drive, and sometimes we'll even talk about like the new chronology stuff. We'll talk about religious stuff, or sort of in my experience and things that I've come to learn, for folks to kind of know about some aspects of my work and things that I've done. You know, you would have my birthday. So I'm now, I don't know if I'm in my 45. I'm 44 or 45. Let me think. I was born in 78. Yeah. Yeah, that's the one. Great. So I want to thank you all. Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow. I think there's going to be some stuff popping off going on. Yeah, antioxidants, vitamin C, and yeah, alpha lipoic acid is very good. That's my, you know, a lot of water, like maybe like 3 liters of water a day. And lots of alpha lipoic acid, antioxidants. Anything antioxidant, just take it in. All right. Peace. I'm out.